evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, November 20th, 2017. On this day of the World Children's Day, a new report says there's a strong chance South Sudanese children will continue to suffer.
Children are facing bleaker prospects. Their future will likely be more difficult than, say, their parents' lives are now. And that was particularly true in South Sudan.
And Kenya's Supreme Court says the results of the rerun of presidential elections will stand.
The presidential election of the 26th October is hereby upheld, as is the election of the third respondent.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Today is World Children's Day. UN Global Children's Day was established in 1954 and is celebrated on November 20th each year. To promote international togetherness, awareness among children and improving children's welfare. This year's theme is Kids Take Over, encouraging young people across the world to step into their parents' shoes and address the plight of those less fortunate. A new report by UNICEF says children in conflict countries like South Sudan are more likely to grow up in extreme poverty without any access to basic education. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
UNICEF conducted a survey in the lead-up to this year's World Children's Day in 37 countries of children's lives and their prospects for the future compared to that of their parents more than 20 years ago. Tim Irwin, head of communications at UNICEF in Juba, says the study paints a bleak picture about the future of millions of children worldwide, especially for the children of South Sudan.
The results were a bit alarming because we found that around 180 million children are facing bleaker prospects. Their future will likely be more difficult than, say, their parents' lives are now. And that was particularly true in South Sudan. Understandably, tragically, because of the ongoing conflict.
Irwin says the study looked at three main areas that assess how children's lives today measure up against their parents' lives 20 years ago in three aspects: escaping extreme poverty, getting a basic education, and avoiding violent deaths. He says in the Central African Republic, Syria, Yemen, and South Sudan, there was a decline in at least one of those three areas. But in South Sudan, there were marked declines in all three areas.
The rate of violent deaths amongst children, for instance, has increased in South Sudan, as it has in other countries in conflict, such as Central African Republic, Iraq, Libya, Ukraine, Yemen, etc. These are other countries where the rate of violent deaths among children has increased.
The UNICEF spokesman says South Sudan's nearly four-year-old conflict has severely affected children's economic conditions and their chances of getting an education.
Children here face more challenges going forward than, say, their parents faced in getting a basic education. And then the other one is escaping poverty. Children here feel that the likelihood of them escaping poverty is less than, say, it had been for even their parents.
Irwin says the only way to break the vicious cycle of conflict in South Sudan is to provide children with a good education.
Time marches on, and one way or the other, these children are going to be the adults of the future, and some of them will be the leaders of the future. And if they're not educated, both in the core subjects, but also in areas such as tolerance and acceptance of others, and in, you know, creating a unified vision of what South Sudan will look like in the future, then the prospects for the country are not encouraging.
And Irwin says it is critical for South Sudan's leaders to end the fighting so that children can go back to school and grow up in a peaceful environment.
There has to be genuine peace and reconciliation and a rebuilding of the country and a sense of people moving forward as a unified nation. And bearing in mind that, you know, the people who have suffered the most as a result of these nearly 4 years of conflict have been children. And, you know, they are saying very clearly in this survey and in the radio programs that we produce for them that all they want is what children around the world take for granted, which is, you know, the chance to grow and thrive and develop and become the future leaders of the country.
A separate UNICEF survey of children aged 9 to 18 in 14 countries, also released today, shows many children are deeply concerned about global issues affecting their peers and them personally, including violence, terrorism, conflict, climate change, and unfair treatment of refugees. World Children's Day marks the anniversary of the adoption of the Convention on the Rights of the Child in 1989. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
And now back to our story from Yei. Some women in Yei River State say they are victims of sexual violence. The women say it's nearly impossible to get justice in Yei since violence broke out in July of last year. They say the perpetrators of such crimes are rarely punished or even arrested or tried in court. Daniel Martin reports for VOA from Yei.
The women attended a weekend workshop organized by the community-based organization Salam Women Group to discuss the need for more protection of women and girls in the communities against sexual predators. A Yei woman whom we shall only identify as Jennifer for the sake of privacy says her sister was raped in June, but she has not been able to seek justice in a court of law against her alleged rapist. Speaking in Arabic, Jennifer says local law enforcement institutions typically pay little attention to issues affecting women. She says most rape victims are hesitant to report the crime to police because authorities usually do very little to uphold women's rights and there is a strong likelihood they will be ostracized in their communities.
What I see is not pleasing is that the government is not paying attention to the victims of sexual violence and rape. Many of these cases are happening in Yei, and once you approach the police to help someone out, they ask, what was the case all about? They blame the victims, saying you searched for it. When the police are investigating, they ask mocking questions, and sometimes they laugh at the victim. This is done by the government.
Jennifer is calling on state officials and human rights groups to promote equal access to justice for rape victims, many of whom are traumatized as a result of the crime committed against them.
The practice of blaming victims should stop. The victims should be taken seriously and helped. NGOs and the government should treat the sexual violence as an issue that needs to be addressed urgently. Once the victim is not attended to, then she or he will not be in position to speak up. The rape victims should be assisted so that they are able to stand up with dignity.
A 26-year-old Rie resident who we are identifying only as Rose says she was recently raped by men in plain clothes. Speaking in Arabic, Rose says she tried without success to get justice. She describes rape as a disease with no medicine in Yei.
Sexual violence is a big issue in Yei. Beta malaria can be treated by mosquito nets and other medicines. But sexual gender-based violence is becoming so common, happening to young girls, ladies and all women. Let the government and the people stand up so that this issue is brought to an end.
Rei resident Linda Edwards says one of her relatives was raped this year. She says she has been helping her relative follow up with the case by talking to authorities, but doubts justice will ever be done. Speaking in Arabic, Edwards is urging the government to ensure that perpetrators of sexual violence are charged and brought to justice so they do not commit the crime again.
I would like to remind the government that if such cases are reported to them, they should not keep quiet. They should ensure the perpetrators are punished and the victims should be accorded rights so that others will not carry out similar abuses because they know they can get away with it.
Hawa Adams, head of the Yei Women Association, says since the outbreak of the conflict in 2016, there has not been a single attempt by state prosecutors to bring perpetrators of sexual violence to book.
Since 2016, so many things has been happening, more especially the gender-based violence, rape cases. No another justice that has ever taken place up to date. So women are just suffering locally in Yei River State. We are really crying so much so that at least government has to take a step to work with the law so that the voice of the women is heard.
Lojan Kamba, the Yei River State Police Commissioner, denies that local police do not take rape cases seriously. But Lojang admits police are unable to prosecute perpetrators immediately due to the absence of functioning courts, due in the part to the judges' strike.
What they have been talking about is not true, because the cases of gender violence or rape, but we have an office of gender-based violence. The police are not happy for what is happening for the women, because they have become a vulnerable group. And I'm encouraging them to come and, you know, open the cases. Right now, in fact, we are working for safety for all, without fear or favor.
Leon Lemery, Director General for Local Government and Law Enforcement in Yeh River State, urged residents to take legal matters to his ministry so that officials can follow up with the relevant government institutions.
There are people that obstruct access to justice. And in this case, specifically cases to do with GBV. If anyone who has experienced such an action, he or she should come to the Minister of Local Government to channel her or his dismay, and as government, we shall take charge and hold the person obstructing the access to the justice responsible for his or her actions.
The women say they will continue to sing and find ways to bring awareness about sexual violence, a disease they say is not taken seriously. They hope speaking up will bring attention to the issue while at the same time support the victims. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yeh.
Russian officials say Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir will visit Moscow on Thursday, his first official trip to Russia. An aide to Russian President Vladimir Putin confirmed the visit today. He told reporters in Russia that the two presidents would meet. Bashir is wanted by the International Criminal Court for genocide and war crimes tied to the Darfur conflict. Despite the charges against him, Bashir has continued to travel to friendly countries. Fighting in Darfur began in 2003 when ethnic minority groups in the western region began to resist the Arab-dominated government. Aid agencies say more than 2 million people have been displaced by the fighting and at least 300,000 have died. Bashir denies the allegations of human rights abuses by his government. The Israeli government says about 40,000 African migrants who entered the country illegally have 3 months to leave voluntarily. If they don't, they will face indefinite imprisonment. According to the United Nations Refugee Agency, about 27,000 of the immigrants are from Eritrea and about 8,000 are from Sudan. The decision made yesterday doesn't say where the migrants would go. However, in the past, the Israeli government had agreements with Rwanda and Uganda to accept migrants. About 5 years ago, a stream of migrants from Africa began entering Israel, mostly through Egypt. At one point, the number of migrants who had entered illegally topped 60,000. Over the past few years, that number has declined, as some have moved on and others were resettled elsewhere. The UN Refugee Agency expressed concern about the Israeli plan. It says Israel's voluntary departure program is done so secretive that the UN officials are unable to monitor the situation of asylum seekers sent to other countries. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the rerun results of the presidential elections in Kenya. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who has been the kindest person to you in your life?
I think my mom. She's kind, or she tolerates everything that I do. Whether it's being good or bad, she does tolerate. So she's kind to me.
To be honest, there are so many. I cannot really remember one particular one, but there's nobody bad, actually, to me. There's nobody bad, because if somebody does something wrong or bad to me, I think that person is trying to educate me on a particular thing.
The kindest person to me in my life is my friend, whom we have studied together from my secondary school to university life. We're still together. He's always honest, and he's so kind to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Kenya's Supreme Court ruled today that Uhuru Kenyatta won last month's presidential election, striking down arguments that the law was not followed in conducting the repeat poll. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Chief Justice David Maraga announced the decision following 3 days of hearings.
The presidential election of the 26th October is hereby upheld, as is the election of the third respondent.
The head of the court dismissed the two petitions filed by a former lawmaker and two human rights defenders. The October vote was a rerun of the August presidential election. Uhuru Kenyatta was declared the winner of the initial vote. But the Supreme Court ruled the result was invalid because of irregularities in the transmission of vote counts. Kenyatta's main challenger, Raila Odinga, boycotted the October poll, saying the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission was not ready to conduct a credible election. The petitioners challenged Kenyatta's victory in the Supreme Court, arguing that the commission was supposed to conduct a fresh nomination process after Odinga withdrew. They also argued the election should not stand since 25 constituencies did not participate in the repeat poll. In a statement, the chairman of the Electoral Commission, Wafula Chebukati, said the unanimous decision by the court affirmed the agency's resolve and effort to conduct a free, fair and credible election. After the ruling, some Kenyatta supporters took to the streets to celebrate the verdict. Mercy Njoki is one of them. I am so happy with the ruling. I waited for it for so long, and God has listened to our prayers. Another Kenyatta supporter, James Chege, wants to see the president reaching out to all citizens.
During the election, there are three groups. One, those who voted for him. Second, those who didn't vote for him. And thirdly, those who didn't go to vote.
Opposition supporter Amos Onyango was disappointed with the verdict.
I'm not happy with those judges, first of all, because judges, they make ruling is not good. Totally, the election on 26th was very bad. It's not election. It's divided election. You cannot decide who won. We have so many parts of Kenya. People didn't vote.
Protests and clashes broke out in pro-Odinga neighborhoods of Nairobi after the verdict. And on Sunday, unknown people killed at least 6 people in Nairobi. Odinga blamed the state for the killings. The police have denied the accusation and say they were investigating the deaths. Kenyatta is expected to be sworn in on November 28th. The opposition say they will not recognize his presidency and will continue to fight for what they call electoral justice. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move to Harare, where Zimbabwe's longtime president, Robert Mugabe, is facing impeachment after making it clear in a televised speech he will not resign. Millions tuned to radio and television yesterday, expecting to celebrate the end of what has been 37 years of Mugabe's autocratic rule. They were bitterly disappointed, some to the point of tears, to hear Mugabe claim he will preside over a ZANU-PF party congress next month. VOA's Anita Paul has this report from Johannesburg.
When Zimbabwe's military sent tanks into the capital and took Robert Mugabe into custody, it was clear they wanted a quick resolution to the growing discontent with the longtime president. But nearly a week later, with Mugabe refusing to resign and parliament threatening to impeach him, they could be on a long and complicated path with a formidable opponent, Mugabe himself. Lovemore Maduku teaches law at the University of Zimbabwe. He says impeachment can be very complex because it is meant to be more than just lawmakers voting out an unpopular leader by a two-thirds vote.
When we say an impeachment in the Zimbabwean context, it actually means a trial. You are accusing the president of something, and then you want them tried for that. If you find them guilty of that thing that you have accused them of, you then dismiss them from being president. You can't do it in one day or in a few minutes or whatever. It takes several months to complete an impeachment.
Zimbabwe's constitution provides four grounds for impeaching a president: serious misconduct, failure to obey, uphold, or defend the constitution, willful violation of the constitution, or inability to perform the functions of the office because of physical or mental incapacity. Maduku says a lawyer might see several opportunities there. Mugabe is widely accused of human rights abuses and clamping down on civil liberties during his 37-year reign. But he said politicians may take other factors into account. For example, Maduku says it is unlikely that the ruling ZANU-PF party would risk hurting its stature by highlighting actions that elevated the party to prominence, such as Gukurahundi, the series of army-led massacres of political and ethnic rivals in the 1980s.
If they get him on that, then they are exposing him to that whole issue about, you know, crimes against humanity and so forth. And I don't think that ZANU-PF is currently constituted would want that end to President Mugabe. They are themselves beneficiaries of his leadership.
But these considerations clash with the increasingly loud demands of Zimbabwe's people. During the weekend, tens of thousands of Harare residents marched, demanding Mugabe's immediate resignation. On Monday, Chris Mutswangwa, head of the influential War Veterans Association, said demonstrations would continue until, in his words, Mugabe's back is seen by the people of Zimbabwe. But Maduku says the military may have underestimated Mugabe and his familiarity with the law.
Even as we move from stage to stage, so many things that they are not aware of in terms of the law. I'm sure that's why they obviously lost the boardroom discussions, because on the legal side, Mugabe is always on the stronger side.
The impeachment process, he notes, allows the president to defend himself against the charges. Mugabe has never been one to shy away from a fight. And as the only leader independent Zimbabwe has ever had, this is one he has spent decades training for. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Leaders from the disputed Abyei region are welcoming the UN Security Council's decision to extend the mandate of UN peacekeepers, known as UN Interim Security Force in Abyei, for another 6 months. The leaders say the presence of UN peacekeepers is crucial for keeping law and order and providing security to the civilian population. From Juba, Michael Atit has more on the story for VOA.
Last week, the UN Security Council renewed UNISA's mandate under the resolution for the 386, which means the peacekeeping force will remain in Abyei through May 2018. Speaking by phone from Abyei this afternoon, UNISFA spokesperson Daniel Adekera says no additional mandate was added to the mission, but UNISFA will continue to provide security in the disputed area.
There's no additional benchmark. We still maintain the former benchmarks, which have to do essentially with keeping security, keeping the area free of arms, and ensuring the protection of civilians. So essentially, it's a renewal of the mandate which we have been mandated to keep, and there's nothing additional substantially.
Adekera admits there have been some security challenges and cases of violence over the past few months. He says the peacekeeping body carries out regular day and night time patrol, an exercise that he says has improved security in the region.
So the situation is calm. Everybody is going about their normal duties, and the UNISFA is proactive enough to give people that assurance and the confidence they need to go about their daily activities.
Adekara praises both the Ngok Dinka and Miseria Arab nomads for cooperating with UNISFA to keep Abyei safe and secure. Balabag Deng Kwal, the Ngok Dinka paramount chief in Abyei, welcomes the renewal of UNISFA mandate in the area. Speaking in Arabic by phone from Abyei, Deng says UNISFA's presence in Abyei is crucial to ensure security for the residents.
UNISFA forces are very important for us in Abyei area, because we don't have any other law enforcement agencies that can keep the law and order like police. UNISFA is the only force in the area that is at least trying to keep law and order. Our people cannot spare UNISFA at the moment.
Deng says UNISFA should remain in Abyei until Juba and Khartoum resolve their dispute over the area's final status, and the mandate should be expanded to include cracking down on criminals operating in the area.
Sometimes they do arrest criminals and they cannot do anything with them because they don't have the mandate to take them to the court. They can just keep them for 24 hours and later on they are freed. In this case, the same criminals can continue carrying out their activities because they are aware nothing will be done to them.
Kual Alor Kual, the Abyei chief administrator, also welcomes the renewal of the UNISFA mandate, saying UNISFA force in Abyei have played an important role in improving security for the local population for the past few years.
In fact, we are all delighted and we got the news of UNISFA mandate in Abyei being extended, and the renewal will give the protection to the civilians in the area.
And the renewal for the mandate of the UN will give the protection.
UNISFA was established on June 27, 2011, under the Resolution 1990. More than 4,000 troops were dispatched to Abyei to protect civilians. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song You Are Not Alone by K Danks.
In my society, you made me lose my ability. You made me disabled in mind. Due to old failure, spine line. You made me cut myself out of my youth. As if I'm injured, oh, illness, but not. As if I'm weak and low, silent, but not. You made me unable to operate normally, temporarily, unable to move and think fairly. You made me very emotional ill. I saw you need me to be unsuccessful in life. That's why I'm unaccessful. You made me fail to think of any practical solution. Soon own a surprise of revolution. Yeah, stand here. Cause I can do it now. Cause I can do it now. Yeah, stand at them. I have to stand alone for a reason why. You made me blind, not to see anything. You made me deaf, not to hear anything. You lock my nose, not to breathe anymore. You control my tongue, not to say in itself. You paralyze my arms, not to stretch itself. You paralyze my legs, not to move anymore. Yeah, I stand at them. Cause I can do it now, cause I can do it now. Yeah, I stand at them. Cause I got access to the process. I'm owning access to the success. Yeah, I stand at them. Cause I can do it now, cause I can do it now. Solution in my society, need to not do thing that people expect me to do. Look, I'm not a chip satisfactory upstandard. You made me fail, accept to test. Right now, I'm ready to protest. Standing on my own, living nose in nose, showing you strongly I disagree to do, stay with you and I agree. We must leave fathers away from center of love. A mistake may come and bind us back in love. I suggest it must be no.
We have been listening to K Danks with the song You Are Not Alone. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to know your comments about our show. Drop us a line at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page, that is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
I have to stand alone for a reason why. You made me blind, not to see anything. You made me deaf, not to hear anything. You lock my nose, not to breathe anymore. You control my tongue, not to pain itself. You paralyze my eyes, not to stretch itself. You paralyze my leg, not to move anymore. Yeah, I'm standing at them. Cause I can do it now, cause I can do it now. Yeah, I'm standing at them.